Hi, this is Rob and Mike from the McClellan Financial Group, and this is Think Smart with TMFG. Mike, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
The other night, we had the opportunity of having a great speaker for our clients, a gentleman known by the name of Preet Banerjee. What were your thoughts as to some of his concepts about mistakes that clients make, that investors make, and the fact that we're wired to make those mistakes as human beings? What were some of your thoughts on those things?
I thought it was an incredible presentation. It started off with the reason why we're wired to make these mistakes. And he went back to caveman times. And he said in caveman times, you had to make very quick decisions. And what you would tend to do with lack of information, you would have to fill in the blanks. And this is a survival instinct. And what people are trained to do now is make decisions without all the facts. And as he said, at the time, if you went back to caveman times and here's a dinosaur, ideally we've learned to run. We have a bunch of other senses. We don't have to see it. We don't have to touch it. We don't have to do anything like that. But off that one thing, we know we have to run. So that's a survival instinct. But the problem is when you take that to modern day era and you start to use it for your investment philosophies and investment ideas, it doesn't work as well.
So in other words, what you're saying is if people hear that there's bad news, they don't necessarily even need to see or read the bad news. They just start running.
Yep, flee.
So, you know, I think of the concept of, you know, there's always this talk of a possible recession.
Yep.
And it seems every day that that has become the flavor du jour, that this upcoming recession, but we're now probably a year and a half into this upcoming recession.
As soon as you read that article, human nature says, I want to go to a safe spot. It doesn't look at unemployment being low as it's been in 50 years, you know, all this stuff, all these different stats that are working against it have nothing to do with it. As soon as you read that article, main thing is to flee to safety.
So Preet talked about something else that I thought was interesting, and he used the example of, you know, if you go to McDonald's, what do you and you pay cash, what's your average bill? And if you put it on a credit card, what's your average bill? And I think the difference was $4.30 if you use cash, and it was $7 if you put it on credit card. And that's just at a simple trip to McDonald's. Imagine you're doing that at different stops throughout the day, whether you're at Shoppers Drug Mart or whether you're at No Frills getting your groceries.
So this is just from memory, but I believe you said it's 18% more on your typical transaction is spent on Visa rather than spent on cash. Because how people work is when you think about having to part with dollars in the future is much different than parting with a dollar right now.
So, you know, I have the choice. I always like to carry cash with me. I always probably have $200 with me at any point in time because that's my safety. I can always pull a 20 out to pay for it, or I could just put it on my card.
Yeah.
If I'm pulling cash out for everything, I'm probably not going to get the extra cookie if I'm at Tim Hortons, or I'm not going to go for the meal. I'm just going to have the sandwich. Now, if I'm putting it on a credit card, maybe I'll have the full meal.
He used a great example. He said, if I walk in with a cinnamon bun that's beautiful, hot, you can smell the cinnamon bun, and I say you can have this one cinnamon bun right now, or you can have two cinnamon buns tomorrow, most people will say, I'll take the one cinnamon bun right now, right? Said, if you give them the same change, if I said you can have one cinnamon bun a year from now, and it can have two cinnamon buns 1 year and 1 day from now, most people would take the two cinnamon buns 1 year and 1 day from now.
Because it's far enough in the future and the difference is irrelevant between 365 days and 366.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But people want it now, right?
He had some other interesting things. There was a comment about debt and, you know, who's carrying the most debt. And, you know, most people think it's, you know, whether it be, you know, the millennial generation or those, the new home buyers. But where is the debt really going? What are we seeing in the economy? Who's carrying the most debt today?
Well, the fastest expansion as far as an age group in debt is among seniors. You know, people are starting to try to use their homes to access more savings. And I don't know what that is. It's a very unusual statistic, but seniors, and, you know, I've seen it too with seniors starting to, you know, I want to take a line of credit on my home because I want to spend some more money on something. That's not a good sign.
You know, the other one that I've had some experience with was reverse mortgages. And many years ago, my mother-in-law, who is unfortunately no longer alive, but she had decided to take on a reverse mortgage. She had done it on her own. She was always a woman who did things on her own, and she decided this was the best way to go. And a couple of years into it, she was, you know, looking at it and wasn't happy with what was going on, because what really happened is her debt started increasing and the interest rates were crazy. And I had to go and engage a lawyer to get involved to help get her out of this reverse mortgage. But it's a perfect example of a senior take, you know, it doesn't appear to be a bad thing when you take it on, but for some people, it's not a good strategy to take on something like a reverse mortgage. Again, poor behavior, taking on debt when that's the last thing you should be doing.
He had another great analogy. Remember the bar of soap analogy?
So I've heard that before, and you know, what it essentially says is, you know, your portfolio is like a bar of soap. You know, if you leave it alone and you come back the next day and you haven't touched that bar of soap, the bar of soap will still be there. But if you start playing with that bar of soap and using it a lot, well, what happens to it?
Disappears.
Starts to get a little smaller.
Yep.
And if you're using that bar of soap every day, now that doesn't mean you shouldn't be using soap when you're having a shower, but it's a concept. And the concept is the more you touch it, the smaller it is. So the more you play with it, the more you, you know, try and tactically move it from fixed income to equities or vice versa, or from cyclical stocks to, you know, maybe to value stocks or whatever your strategy is. It can be as simple as just looking at your portfolio two or three times a day.
And he was actually taking we always get different time periods for these returns of the S&P 500 versus your average investor. And I think his was running up to 2015, or they always have different time frames. But even in his example, the average return of the S&P 500 at that time was in the mid eights. The average investor was 2.1, I believe.
So you've got a gap of almost 6% between how the average investor is doing buying into the S&P 500 and how the S&P 500 is doing itself. And that gap is almost all entirely behavior.
No one wants to believe that one, but it's just a fact. These are studies I've seen done by multiple firms, multiple times, different indices, different everywhere it's done, it comes up with the same result.
So I've found this always interesting. You know, I've been at this a long time, and I find that our new money coming in, whether it be from existing clients or from new clients, tends to drop down after we've had a negative year in the market. So 2018 for a Canadian investor tended to be a negative year. So to start 2019, when things are in theory on sale, investors have a hard time investing new money. What do you think of that concept?
Well, it got back to, he got into a bit of a theory on what they call anchoring, right? And this is something where people establish mental values of where they think things should be for no real reason. And it's just a matter of them going and seeing this and want to get to a certain point. And this can cause really poor financial decisions, this anchoring strategy. So you find it, I find it going a lot on with homes now. Have a lot of people trying to sell their home. They're refusing to sell their home because it's not worth what it was in 2017. They've anchored into that value. They have made 300 or 400% on their home from when they bought it, but they're anchored into that one value was at 2017. They won't sell it for less. And there's no real reason for it other than a mental spot that they put, right? Portfolios have the same thing. People get anchored on certain values.
Absolutely. And they'll hold on to it forever. You know, a client came in today and we were just talking about housing prices. And she made the comment, there's five houses in the neighborhood that are for sale and have been for sale for 6 months. And she said, you know, a year ago, those houses were sold in 2 weeks. And suddenly you've had a slowdown. But people have anchored to what they think their house is worth.
Yep.
But the market's changed. No one's willing to pay the price that maybe it was $2 million before. They're not willing to pay that today. They're willing to pay $1.6 million. But if you're the person selling it, you're anchored at $2 million. Yeah. Even though 2 years ago, it was probably worth $1.6 million.
The problem with anchoring our portfolios too is no one knows what to do. Like they really get very confused on this because ideally you should have an anchor to buy in that's much lower than today's value, but they're looking for a high anchor, which makes no sense. So before they're comfortable with investing, they want to see great rates of return, but that would be a difficult point to invest in too.
Well, you want the economy to be moving. You want everything to be good and everything coming up roses. And then you're going to put your money in.
Yeah, you want a low market with a perfect economy and great news. It just doesn't happen.
So it'd be like, you know, you go into the grocery store and you avoid everything that's on sale. You know, you go into the bay and you just avoid everything that's on sale and you want to just look at all the new arrivals that are at full price.
Yep.
You would never do that.
Yep.
Right?
But well invested, that's what people think.
That's what makes it tricky. So what were some of the other things that Preet touched on that you think are interesting?
I found some. They may just be fun, but the one I found very interesting is he had a picture of a fruit bowl and a piece of cake up. And generally, if you ask people to make a decision if they want fruit or cake, they might be 60% toward fruit, 40% toward cake. If you ask them to memorize a 7-digit number while making that decision, 90% of the time they're going to take cake. Because you lose the ability to make proper decisions when your mind's thinking of something else. We think we can multitask. We can't multitask that well.
So that's sort of tied into his other comment about decision making. And he mentioned something about that, you know, you should probably make your decisions on a Monday because you've had a chance to rest and get ready over the weekend. And so you come in Monday and your mind is clear. Whereas by Friday, you're carrying the baggage for the week. And, you know, sometimes I get home after a long day at the office and I'm having to make decisions for my wife, whether it's be, you know, what we're doing on the weekend or vacations or something related to the kids. And I struggle making those decisions. Whereas if I try and make them when I'm rested, it's easy for me.
Tired minds make poor decisions.
I guess that happens. Was there anything else?
That was most of what I got out of it. I thought it was a great speech. I wish we could deliver it as well as he does.
It was so easy to understand. I know our clients and guests were engaged. I think that at the end of the day, his concept of we're not wired to make good decisions makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
This is Rob and Mike with Think Smart with TMFG.
You have been listening to the McClelland Financial Group of Asante Capital Management Limited. Asante Capital Management Limited is a member of the Canadian Investor Protection Fund and Investment Industry Regulatory Organization of Canada. Insurance products and services are provided through Asante Estate and Insurance Services Incorporated. This material is provided for general information and is subject to change without notice. Every effort has been made to compile this material from reliable sources, however, no warranty can be made as to its accuracy or completeness. Before acting on any of the above, please make sure to see a professional advisor for individual financial advice based on your personal circumstances.